Hey, everybody, we're back with another first-run movie. Tonight we saw Christopher Nolan's war epic, I guess you'd call it drama, Dunkirk. Jim, what'd you think of it?
Well, it's a good war movie.
Yeah.
Although, I struggle to call this a war movie. Like, it takes... It's definitely the subject is war, but no, it feels more like Gravity to me, honestly. Like in
a disaster film,
kind of. It feels more like these people just in extreme circumstance that you're trying to get them out of. Like war movie usually to me entails a lot of fighting. Mm-hmm. This really doesn't have a ton of fighting, and I mean it certainly takes place around a war.
Yeah.
It was part of the war, but...
I mean, this isn't the kind of movie you come out 10 minutes later talk about. Like, I'm almost resentful that I have to try. Like, Ebert didn't have this shit. He didn't walk out of a movie theater and someone stick a microphone in his face 10 minutes later.
That's true.
He had time, presumably, to compose his thoughts and think about it. I mean, it's a great film. It made me... it's harrowing. It's really unflinching, and showing some of the best and worst of humanity. I found my heart swelling with secondhand patriotism, three sizes too big towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Nolan is just I don't know. I'm really having trouble saying anything other than it's an excellent movie, and it's a very arresting movie. I think this is the first kind of reaction I've had like this, where it's like it's undeniably a great movie, but like as far as breaking down the details and you know going beat by beat and you know it's just you know it could be more different than fucking Spider-Man.
sure. I don't know how to kind of talk about it in non-spoilery terms for very long.
It's not okay. I mean, there's a couple of things. It's not as bloody as I thought it would be.
Right, because there's not a lot of fighting, like I said.
It's not that there's not a lot of fighting. It's a lot of fighting is like ship to aircraft to ground. I mean, whereas I feel like early in the movie there is a, you know, this isn't a spoiler, but the poor men on the beach of Dunkirk get the shit bombed out of them by Nazis. And there's one scene early on where from one of the, you know, you follow a half dozen men throughout this you know, retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where the ME-101, I guess, is dropping bombs on this line of dudes. And there's like one guy in the foreground that gets exploded. And like, I feel like in a Steven Spielberg film, you would have like just seen like body parts raining and he'd just blow apart, like this Saving Private Ryan. Like in this movie, he just is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you see him, you see his body exit the frame, and this, you like, there's very little. Very little blood. There's more oil than blood in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say it's not violent. It's extremely violent, and the first two-thirds of this movie is just a pressure cooker that's almost oppressive.
Yeah, it's Gravity.
And designed to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I figured that What's-Her-Face would make it out of Gravity. Uh-huh. Like, I exposed my ignorance to Dunkirk because when I first saw the teaser for it, I thought it was a World War I film. So like, I decided, like, you know, people are like, oh, you fucking idiot. It's World War II. It's this famous, you know, kind of last stand to get these people evacuated. And I'm like, okay, well, since I'm going into this blind, I'm just going to continue to go in blind. So I honestly didn't know. Like, in the first act, on the table was like all 300,000 these guys is getting obliterated, and you know what would that then? But so I was, I thought the first half, the whole movie kind of shook me up. I'm still kind of fucked up.
Yeah, honestly. I can tell. Yeah. I can tell. I don't know. I think they do a really good job setting it up.
Sometimes empathy is a bitch, is what I'm saying. Uh-huh. And like, I just can't help but put myself in everyone's place, and it's just like, shit, fuck it. No, fuck all this.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
So anyway, what are you going to say?
I feel like they do a really good job setting up the scenario. So that even people who don't know anything about Dunkirk can kind of get into the scenario yeah. right away.
Yeah.
And I count myself among those. I know nothing about Dunkirk.
And that's the thing. Like, was this going to hold up to historical scrutiny? Is it supposed to? Like, right. why did Nolan feel like he needed to make this film at this date, mm-hmm. this juncture in time? Like, what?
He's trying to outdo Stanley Kubrick. I don't know if it's going to work, man.
Did you anything about like why he chose this as a subject? Or?
I have no idea.
I mean, it's like it felt a lot like a more visceral version of listening to Dan Carlin's Countdown to Armageddon.
Yeah, if he had done like a Dunkirk.
Right. Where it's just like how you have these individual human beings that are in the fucking jaws of this threshing machine,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely and it's. So you talk about like it's an unusual war film because most war films are films of volition, like men are storming off a boat into gunfire and men are yeah. saving other men and men are charging into the jungle. This is almost like a war film about enduring. Like what is it like mm-hmm. to be packed 12 dudes deep along a mile pier and to see dive bombers coming and know that there's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. It's a flip of the coin about whether you're going to live or die in this here moment. And that is a different glimpse of war, a different type of war film that I've never seen before.
Yeah. Yeah, it is somewhat unique. I want to talk more about this, but I feel like it's all going to get pretty spoilery pretty
yeah,
quickly.
Yeah, and I don't know how much I'm going to have to say in the spoiler section, to be honest, but it's something else. It's something else.
Yeah, I think definitely you should go see it. I wonder, the theater was pretty packed, which was nice to see.
Yes, it was. It was a kind of a capacity show. I don't know. I wonder what is it a different effect to watch this as a British person?
Oh, I imagine it has to be.
Because I was just completely, and I don't know, like I've never really thought about this, but like, what's it like to be an Englishman and watch like Saving Private Ryan or Platoon or
right,
you know, I just that's one of the things I was wondering, like and that's the other thing is like how many American films have there been made about British.
Oh, that's like a good question.
War, I mean, was I that... what was that one?
I don't see a lot of them.
Was that one of Michael Caine, Zulu?
Like, oh, Zulu, yeah,
that
yeah.
was that's had to uh-huh. be an English film, right?
Probably.
So I don't know. Is Christopher Nolan English? He's American, right?
I think so, yeah.
It's a great film. We should move on.
So maybe we should get over the trailers. We started off with what I think looks like an awesome movie. I'm super excited about it. Blade Runner 2049.
Yes.
I can't remember if you talked about this one last time, if
no,
you saw the trailer.
Okay. I've never seen this trailer before. I know it came out, but I'm not, like, unless it's like a superhero movie or something like that, or a Star Wars movie, I very rarely watch it on YouTube because yeah. I know I'm going to see these things a billion times in the theater because I'm seeing movies all the time anyway.
Yep.
So, like, I prefer to see it on a big screen. And also... It's the best way to avoid spoilers. Just stay off the sites and but yeah, I thought that it was incredible. I had no idea Ryan Gosling was in it.
Neither did I.
I had no idea Robin Wright was in it mm-hmm. as some kind of a future leader.
Yeah, you've got a whole bunch of big stars, people I really enjoy watching in a movie that looks awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like $1 million. At one point, I saw the Atari logo on the side of a building,
did
which
you?
I was like, oh, hell yeah, let's do this. If we're going full 80s dystopia, let's
yeah.
do it.
I mean, the film, I mean, I don't know how many times you've seen Blade Runner, but it's got a very distinctive future kind of feel,
yeah.
and this does feel like it is of a piece with that.
Very much so, yeah.
I guess, my guess, because you know, there's like a controversy about whether Deckard himself was a replicant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Ridley Scott has a definitive opinion on that. And
oh,
it
yeah?
seems like he's running with it. Because, like, from what I gathered, a trailer is like, yes, that Harrison Ford has been a replicant and he's been off in some kind of wasteland hiding out from people like himself.
The wasteland of California, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, so I was like, I don't know, because I always felt that was kind of, I don't know, not to argue with the fucking gentleman about his own film, but mm-hmm. I always thought that, I don't know. I never liked the fact that he waded in and said, "Oh no, no, you guys have been fucking around, thinking the wrong thing about a movie. He's definitely a robot." But that's just, so I don't know. Like it looks great. I'm very interested in it. Certainly looks like a first run bald movie.
Yeah, definitely. There's another one called Logan Lucky, which I know you talked about.
That's the one
previously.
I talked about with Magic Mike, Kylo Ren, and James Bond. What did you make? I mean, did you see what I was saying about it? Like, it's really weird.
It is. Yeah, I don't know about this one. Like, I get Daniel Craig needs to do something after James Bond to say, "Hey, I'm not just James Bond,"
right,
to us Americans. But I don't know about this. This was a real weird looking one.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe it could be good, but it's a comedy. We're probably not going to see it.
Not only that, it's like it's like a caper. I mean, it does feel like a redneck Ocean's 11.
It does,
but that's as elevator pitches go. That's me hitting the button to keep going up. You know,
yeah,
I'm not staying on this floor.
Another one that I'm not 100% sold on, but it looked like it could be cool. Which I'm going to say. Maybe a worse name than the Bye Bye Man, which was my like contender for the year of worst movie name. The Snowman.
The Snowman.
Snowman is a pretty bad name, but it looks like it might be a cool movie. I don't know.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it's one of these bone collector style with Michael Fassbender in the the head police investigator role. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a silly concept, a guy dismembering women and building snowmen out of them. Snow women.
Right.
Sorry.
It's ridiculous. I do like that. I assume it takes place in like Alaska or something, right?
Maybe.
Somewhere obviously super cold.
It looks like a really fucked up acid trip Fargo. Because, it's got all that, you know, snow. I don't know.
It's the only place a killer like the Snowman could possibly do his deeds.
Spoiler: it actually takes place in Miami.
Right. You don't get the Snowman in Miami.
Yeah.
I don't know. Looks kind of cool.
Is it cool or is it almost like it almost looks like one of those movies that's in so bad it might be good?
I don't know. I think it's borderline good bad.
I mean, like, the opening of the trailer.
I like those kind of things, though. I'm not looking for like the highest art form in my horror.
Sure, sure.
I want some cool kills. I want some good moments. That's it.
I just was like, you know, the opening scene where this guy stalks a woman. He hits her with a snowball.
Uh-huh.
Like that just feels like. It felt it like does. I was watching the parody version, you know, like epic movie, like the Snowman, as a response to the Snowman who would try to take itself seriously. But like that scene, I'm like, who the fuck throws a snowball?
Yeah, and then it got seemingly a lot more serious throughout the thing. Like Fassbender's doing his thing. I don't know.
What'd you make of Only the Brave about the fire jumpers?
I just assumed I missed the title card. I assumed that was called Hot Shots because they said Hot Shots like 500 times in that trailer.
I missed the title card too. I had to frantically read it from the things flashing by at the end.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Only the Brave. It opens with a bear on fire.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It's Josh Brolin.
CG bear, obviously.
It's Josh Brolin playing, you know, I don't know what the setup is. A small town been trying to get fired, like certified hotshot fire jumpers, and some bullshit federal regulation says they're not good enough, and then fire comes there. I don't know. It's kind of like a little, like I'm more interested than the Oil Derrick movie, which I guess that came out, and it must have been like a wet turd or wet fart.
Yeah, Marky Mark.
You don't want dry turds.
No, well, I don't want wet ones either.
Wet, really?
No, what, I really just want to avoid turds at all costs.
I'm talking about when they're coming out, like when they're inevitable.
Oh, okay.
Like when you're packed shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of men, do you want them wet or do you want them dry? It's a wet, I don't know. Like it's
this
so many men.
Too much of like Kevin Costner training a bunch of boys to run real fast.
Yeah.
I watched that movie on a plane.
Yeah, we'll see, because I've always thought that it's an interesting... I think this is a worthy subject to do a movie on.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if this is that movie. Then I think that's it, because there's a Star Wars trailer we've seen a million times.
And there's It,
we talked about a million times.
Kingsman, we've talked about all those.
Talked about a million times, yeah. Yep. Have you seen the first Kingsman yet?
No.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's it for the trailers.
Yeah.
So we actually will be back next week for Atomic Blonde.
We will.
Hopefully I'll have recovered from my war movie trauma by then, so I can, like, you know, because it's going to, yeah, that's the other thing, is like every single time I watch a serious war film, I get jaded about violence, which doesn't bode well for Game of Thrones or Atomic Blonde, or it's like, woohoo, look at people dying. It's so fun. It's so cool.
Oh, boy. This, like, should be, you know, a great Game of Thrones season.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, in 3 days I'm going to get to watch goddamn medieval warfare, and it's going to be fun. But anyway, yeah.
All right, let's do the spoiler thing. I have a few things to talk about. I don't imagine this is going to be a very long spoiler section.
Did Tom Hardy have a bet with his agent that he could show less of his face than he did in
Bane?
Because he was essentially Bane in a Spitfire.
He was, yeah.
Even a little bit of the vocal inflections.
Mm-hmm.
He's on me. I'm on him. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't have much funny to say about this movie.
Yeah, there's not a ton of funny stuff. What do you think about the interleaving storyline?
So I found it very distracting the first act. I'm like, Jesus Christ, yep. Christopher Nolan, can you just fucking tell a linear storyline? Mm-hmm. But by the third act, I was smacking myself because I felt like it was perfectly paced, so all the storylines converged for the maximum emotional impact. I think it's the story, and I would, if you had asked me this an hour into the movie, I would have denied it, but I think that the nonlinear narrative of the different phases of this evacuation and the different, you know, the combined arms nature of the Navy and the Air Force and mm-hmm. the Army, all coming together, and the civilian brigade, my God, the civilian brigade, that stuff all, it had to be told this way or it would have been a very uneven, poorly paced film.
Yeah, it does have to come to like a crescendo at the end. And I think when it first started, I was very distracted like you were. I actually was actively disliking watching the same footage from a different angle when it was like in 3 or 4 minute chunks.
Mm-hmm.
But once it got to like, here's a minute of this, here's a minute of this, here's a minute of that, I felt like it all came together really, really well and led up to just a brilliant third act.
And I thought that I was kind of also worried that they clearly had the stopwatch motif that was such a big part of the trailer, and they continued that through the movie, and mm-hmm. I was skeptical about that, but by the end, like, it's really a pulse pounder.
Yeah, I mean, it served to really heighten the tension,
yeah.
Knowing that there's a clock on this for everybody. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Germans are closing in, the gas is running out.
Right.
Fuel, and petrol, whatever they're using.
And it had me questioning a lot about, like, you know, because you can't help but watch a movie like Saving Private Ryan and figure and ask, you know, would you get off the boat if it was being hammered by machine gun fire? Would you face a panzer tank with a fucking, you know,
sock full of dynamite, 45?
But this movie had me asking, like, you know, what would I be willing to do to survive? Because mm-hmm. a lot of that was just like, these guys just want to get the hell out of this beach.
Yeah.
And like, people are forming orderly lines, and other people are like looking at those orderly lines like, fuck that. But mm-hmm. like, there was a little bit of like a weird karma thing that it's like almost like when the guys who, I guess they're painted as not exactly cowardly or craven, mm-hmm. but you know, they're abusing. They're essentially trying to scam their way off of this thing early.
Yeah.
Like when they finally just kind of accept their fate, that's when they get salvation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, what kind of moral that is. I don't know how, like, accurate that is. But I was thinking, like, geez, you know, would I be willing to dig up some dude and steal his uniform and pass as an Englishman if I'm a Frenchman to get the hell out of here? Or
right. Yeah, I didn't feel like the movie was trying to, you know, cast aspersions against the people who were doing the things they felt necessary
to
get off the beach.
Almost to the point where I was questioning when, like, the civilians, there's the civilian boat with the dad and his son and his son's friend.
Yeah.
I was questioning how, like, they were so cool and understanding about Cillian Murphy just losing his shit. And he kills a guy.
Yeah.
He kills their friend.
Kills a kid.
Yeah. Kills a kid, a 17-year-old. But then you find out, like, just bits and pieces. Like, I figured that they're going to reveal that this guy was like a World War One vet or something. But no, his son was in the Royal Air Force and he had died already in the war before England had even entered the war. So that made the fact that they were a little bit more understanding about this craziness going on.
Yeah.
I didn't, like I said, I don't, after I saw the whole, I had a lot of problems in the midpoint in this film, but by the time I saw the end, like, I felt like none of the problems were worth talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I kind of expected, I guess, more waves of salvation here, like more waves of boats coming in and pulling people off. But really, it's a small story, you know. Yes. For the number of people who are on that beach, it's a very small story.
Right.
We deal with maybe 20, 30 people tops.
Right.
Directly.
Yeah.
I mean, the final boat of that captain you were talking about earlier is probably full of like 60 people.
Uh-huh.
But that's the max that we, you know, really get to know in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that surprised me a little bit, but I feel like the movie was well served by that.
Yeah. It's also short. Like, I don't think the movie is even 2 hours long.
Not quite, no. It's hour 46.
I mean, I think I knew that on some level going in because I think I've expressed – I was, I guess, expecting like a 2-hour and 45-minute like true epic.
Yeah.
But there is, but I'm glad it's not, because this thing told the story it meant to do. There's not an ounce of fat on its bones.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really a single wasted frame. Like, even, I guess I never got fed up with the different angle, because I felt like I was getting new information each time. Like, yeah. I thought what was really cool was like, seeing Tom Hardy thing when his wingman ditched and he's waving, he thinks everything's good, and then you find out this guy fought for his fucking life.
Yeah.
And then Tom Hardy and his selfless heroism later in the movie saves that guy without even knowing it.
Right.
And then gets captured as a German POW, and that's probably not fun. But like, no. You know, the guy fought, and then I got thought it was like, that was like such a, there's very few cool moments in this film, but when he shot that Nazi out of the sky dead stick,
yeah,
that was incredible. And if it wasn't for that, like, the movie would have almost no lightness at all. But that segs right into the men going home, and they're afraid. Like, you know, this is an era when you know, you come home after ignominious defeat, and you know, they're like worried about people spitting on them, and like everyone's buying them beers, and they got this brilliant, you know, one of the most, you know, moving national rah-rah speeches. Churchill's famous, you know, we'll fight them on the beaches and we'll fight them on the waterfront.
His Dr. Seuss speech, it all just rhymes.
Yeah. But it's like, he's got a fucking way with words, and I found it genuine. Yeah. Like building from that Tom Hardy moment, and he's like the most obvious hero throughout the whole film.
Right.
Most action hero-y guy of the whole film. I thought was just a brilliant touch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
What about
how much? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say I'm a little bit. Well, I don't know if I'm confused, but I think it's an interesting look at kind of different angles of this, to see the guy at the end who, you know, this old man, blind man, we find out, who is handing out blankets, and the first guy walks past him. He won't even look at him. He's like, all we did is survive. And the second guy comes up, finds out he's blind, and then they get on the train, and that guy, that first guy says, a guy couldn't even look us in the eyes.
Right.
And the other guy's asleep, so he can't tell him, hey, actually, he was blind.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out the purpose of that, and to me, it seemed like it was just trying to show us the different types of people who might be coming home.
Right.
And the different perspectives they have on things.
Right.
And then, you know, once he sees kind of the welcome that they're getting and the feeling back home, I think he sort of understands.
Yeah.
But yeah. In that moment, it felt very much like he was worried. He was angry almost, like at himself and at his country for not coming to bail them out sooner, like all kinds of stuff.
Right.
I think that was mostly,
and there was a lot of that going. End. Like this infantryman, like they see the Royal Air Force guy who got shot out of the sky, blowing up Nazis. Like, where the hell were you? And you can see he's deflated a little bit, but you know the captain's quick, like, hey, the men on this boat know where you were, because
yeah.
And there's a lot of that, like weird kind of circular firing squad, which I was. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that was in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I understand, like, the men thinking that they were going to be treated as, like, these craven retreaters. That was uplifting. But, like, you know, the digs at the Air Force were – felt like it was just punching down, you know? Like, dude, do you not see this guy's uniform covered in oil and he's dripping wet? Like, how do you think he fucking got? How do you think he fucking got here? Yeah. You think he pulled up in his Corvette and was like, "Hey, you know, cheerio, chaps."
Right.
I've been pounding your women while you've been away. Like, come on.
I think it was to make that ending not too sweet, right? Because
yeah,
it's still a bitter thing.
Is there an argument to be made that the movie couldn't be too sweet in the last 5 or 10 minutes?
Potentially.
But I don't like it's like, yeah, like it's because it was a whole lot of leaven till you got to the lightness at the end.
Right.
How much? I mean, I wish I knew more about the production of the film because the dogfights, like, you could have told me that they actually had, you know, replica Supermarine Spitfires and I would fucking believe it.
Yeah.
I have an interesting relationship with this aircraft because I was really into RC airplanes back about 15 years ago. And one of the final things I did is I built the real Spitfire is a 36-foot wingspan. Mine had a 4-foot. So what is that, like a 1/12th replica or what? But I built a replica, and I did it all from just – I didn't use a plan. I actually did research and, like, you know – different plan views of it to lay it out and can carefully construct it. And I built it, and, like, you know, it's famed for having, like, the weird parabolic wing shape and for having this extremely, and I was gratified. I didn't mean to do this, but the particular, like, prop pitch that I used and the particular electric motor and the construction of it being primarily out of this rigid foam, like, when I fired it up, it actually in the air made like a fairly good convincing it had this harmonic with the airframe. And I just laughed out loud when it first passed me because it sounded like a fucking Spitfire. And it was really cool. And so I know a lot about these aircraft, and I was like, I honestly couldn't tell whether they're CG or they have a few of, I know they have a few of those flying. How much of that stuff was actually real footage? How much of that stuff was, you know, just Tom Hardy in a CGI cockpit? Because I couldn't tell. I'm sure a lot of this film was CG, but man, it's getting to the point where you just really can't tell.
Yeah, the plane scenes were outstanding.
Yeah.
I thought those were some of the most engaging scenes of the whole movie.
Yeah. And I learned something new about the Spitfire. They had those nifty little, like, optical holographic gun sights. That was like, the more you find out about World War II technology, the more you're like, kind of think that we just been sitting on our ass. Like, we invented cell phones and, like, woohoo, we did it. Like, these fuckers are putting holographic gun sights, and they invented jet technology and it went to the moon and we made cell phones. And that's cool. But, yeah, I know that's
a couple other things as well, but yeah.
There's been other advancements.
A little,
like,
reductive,
you think, because my son's always acting like, you know, I lived in the Stone Age, right? But, like, it's just it's amazing, like, when the modern age kind of begun. And I guess it kind of around World War I, I guess, is when things started, like, stopped being, you know, fucking Snoopy and the Red Baron and started being modern towards the end of that conflict.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the technical aspects of it too. Like, everything just looked utterly convincing.
Did.
What else do we want to talk about, man?
I don't have a ton more to say about it. I do think it was a really, really good movie. I enjoyed it.
It's too bad. I the other thing, I guess, George, the character that dies, is he the only character, the only main character that dies in the whole film?
Main character? I don't know. I mean,
how do you define main character? Right?
That one guy drowns in the boat, the beached boat.
It's Kenneth Branagh. He's a main character. Did you recognize the young colonel?
I did, but I don't know.
He was
his
Lieutenant
name.
Pullings from I think it's James Darcy, but maybe that's wrong. But he was definitely Lieutenant Pullings from the Master and Commander film we just watched.
Lieutenant Pullings.
Lieutenant Pullings.
I don't remember.
Lieutenant Pullings, I should say.
Yeah, I don't remember which one he was.
He was the guy in the brown uniform that was the one I got a grim laugh out of when the colonel was lecturing the, I guess, admiral about the tides. Like, don't they come in every 3 hours? Or he's like, come in at 6. I thought they come in at 3. He's like, well, it's a good thing you're the Army and I'm the Navy then.
Right.
But yeah, I get back to George. George was kind of a nothing character. Like, he was almost an emotional MacGuffin. Like, he was there.
He was, yeah.
His death only served the purpose to put conflict in the boat, the moonshine or whatever the hell it was called, mm-hmm. the moonbeam,
Moonraker. Yep.
Yeah, it's Moonraker. And I thought that was an odd choice to have someone just entire his death to be just a launching pad for, you know, how you feel about trauma, you know, people that have been traumatized. And there was also an odd moment at the end where Cillian Murphy kind of looked back and you're like, is he going to take responsibility for what he did? And then he just turns his back and bleeds into the crowd. And that was an odd moment. That's the thing, like, I need to see this movie more often because there's a lot of beats where I didn't quite understand, especially the early goings when I was still struggling with the time jumps and the time frames.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that might be the point, though. You come away from it like there isn't a single thing that comes out of this, right?
Yeah.
Like, not everybody went home happy. Not everybody went home sad.
Yeah.
Everybody had a different experience with it, and I think he's trying to reflect a little bit of that in the movie.
Right. And this is just like, this is all the prologue of a bigger movie, right? Because like they made that point, like that was a low key point in the end. It's like, yeah, our asses are saved, but now we have to defend our island from the Germans.
Yeah.
Who are going to start terror bombing the shit out of us. And I you know, that's the other thing is like, I think the British people are culturally kind of incredible. The whole, you know, I can't remember what movie we talked about, but there I recently made mention of the fact that you compare and contrast how we in the 21st century have behaved when we are attacked by an enemy versus the way Englishmen and women responded to being terror bombed and firebombed by the Nazis. And you can't help but find, I guess, our generation wanting in a lot of respects. But yeah, it's the fact that these guys got by at the skin of their teeth and then they instantly have to go on to defense.
Yeah, there's a certain resiliency in that country that I see, and reflected at least in cinema.
And I need to see, because I want to now just dive into this, because I'd like to know, like, how long was it from, like, Dunkirk until, like, Pearl Harbor and the United States entering the war, and, like, how long were they just kind of, like, they were, it was their island versus, like, all of occupied Europe. Like, Jesus Christ,
right.
That's some grim shit. How do you maintain your composure? How do you maintain your national fortitude in those kind of odds?
Yeah, and I mean it's extremely touching to see, you know, the people, the civilians,
right,
coming to the rescue of the people who are trying to defend them,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, it also, like, I was thinking, like, towards the second and third act, like, you think of, like, the ugly American stereotype of, like, we had to come over there and save your asses in WW2, you know, and, like, how, like, fucking hollow that is in the face of, like, what they had to go through. Like, that's easy to say across an entire ocean where you never, other than Pearl Harbor, which you still had a whole ocean between you and the enemy.
Right.
Like, it's easy to make stuff like that when your home soil was never bombed to the extent that it was.
Yeah, it was never in jeopardy.
Right, yeah.
It's
a whole different feel. Like, when you're helping your buddy, you know, like, if your buddy's house is on fire and you're trying to help him out, like, it's a whole different experience than your buddy whose house is on fire.
Right.
You know? and I felt like that, I don't know. I'm curious to see how this does, like, commercially, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it was a packed house speaks well of it.
But I was a little surprised by that. Honestly,
yeah,
I thought this was going to be a little slimmer.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I haven't heard an enormous amount of buzz about this. It's weird because I haven't watched. It's been like 6 weeks since I've actually watched television.
6 weeks?
Yeah, because like all of the TV watching I did in the height was all like on apps. I was using HBO Go.
Oh yeah, yeah.
FX Now. I was using AMC's thing to watch this stuff. Because it was much more convenient, and I was getting weird ass commercials for fucking Jägermeister and Tin Cup Whiskey and Movantix and shit like that. So I don't really have a pulse of like. If Dunkirk had this massive advertising campaign, but you know, that was like, because we talked about that with the Master and Commander, is conventional wisdom that like, you know, one of the reasons it didn't do so well is because it's about English, it's about this British war, and that they changed the subject matter so they weren't at war with America because, oh my god, what would Americans think? Mm-hmm. I wonder how well it'll do in the States.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like I can't imagine, like, because the other thing is, like, with the box office is more and more they talk about the global and they're talking about, you know, Asia and India and, like, do what will they think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because it's...
Yeah, what appeal would it have over there,
I mean, it doesn't... It's not dialogue heavy.
That's true.
Like, in fact, there's, like, the first 5 or 10 minutes of the movie, the only thing said is by Frenchmen.
Yeah, but they had... even less involvement than we did.
Yeah.
From like a just war perspective.
Right.
Because, you know, as much as this is obviously far more about the British than it is about America, but America was at least part of that war.
Right.
To a large extent. So I don't know if you take it over to India or somewhere.
Well, China was, I mean, I know this from Axis and Allies, the board game. They were on our side.
Yeah,
against the Japanese. So maybe it'll. And you know, it is. Yeah. I don't think you have to. You know, Transformers kind of bombed over in China, so it's like it's. I feel like for Hollywood, it's kind of like whatever. As long as it's got explosions, you can shove over there and they'll swallow everything. I mean, maybe they're
right.
Maybe that's selling the international audiences short, perhaps.
Probably. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just very curious. I have no idea like what a film like this will do because it's not like I don't want to instantly jump in and see this movie again.
Yeah.
It's not like a Spider-Man or Star Wars where you might see it 3 times in a season, and you know that's got to help. I don't know.
I wonder if the success of it as far as, you know, filling our theater at least, is partially due to Christopher Nolan. Like, could it just be his rep is so good that people will see basically anything he does now?
Right, because he's, like, I don't think he's made a bad film, and they're always they're always visually arresting to look at, and they're also thought-provoking, and they're challenging because they're always doing something weird with time and your audience perspective.
Right.
And that's the thing, is like I started rolling my eyes like, geez, this is getting a little bit of M. Night Shyamalan on us with this one trick pony, but by God, it's a really good trick and he plays it very well in this movie.
Well, you know why Tom Hardy was writing down all those numbers, right? He lost his memory. He had to write across his cockpit.
I was thinking he was keeping track of where the scene breaks were and he's like, you know, with the script and like, oh, what point in, you know, what point in time are we? I got 15 minutes? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. So like, it's like the mole was 1 week, and like the civilian thing was like 1 day.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all.
And then the Air Force was 1 hour. So I guess everything that you saw from the guy wiping his ass with the Nazi, were you're so fucked propaganda, to him getting off the boat or onto the boat and away was exactly a week.
Okay.
And that the civilian forces was exactly a day, and then Tom Hardy's point was exactly 1 hour of the movie,
mm-hmm.
and they all converged at the end. So
All right. That
was cool. That was cool. Also, like the German bombers make a surprisingly good villain.
Yeah,
like they did. They felt
the sound
like,
of them.
Yeah, and they're menacing, and they got this black, you know, kind of like manta shadow, and like mm-hmm. when you see it coming for these civilian crafts, by you motherfucker, shoot him down, Tom Hart. You know, it's like it's. With a film where you never see, like, I think you see 2 Germans like taking Tom Hardy prisoner at the end after he destroys the Spitfire. You never see the enemy.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a good thing their aircraft are fucking menacing.
Yeah.
Because you could tell that you like it was I didn't have a hard time at all keeping track, even at a distance, like which aircraft is which. And
yeah.
Very distinctive and looking and feeling stuff. And yeah, just it's a great movie.
The other thing about those aircraft scenes, like that final one where he loses his engines, right?
Yeah.
Or he runs out of gas, which effectively loses his engines. It's so surreal to see the plane going overhead with no sound.
Yeah, after they beat into your head, like the sound of these Rolls-Royce engines and how sweet they are. And there were
a lot of moments like that, and they do this a lot in war films. This is not unique, but just like surreal things that you see during war.
Yeah, yeah.
Like because things are so extreme, it's like this once-in-a-lifetime thing that you see.
Right, yeah. And then
I always like those.
I thought that the scale, like surely those weren't actual men on the beaches when you see some of these panoramic shots, but like you know,
they're reusing the fuck. What are they? Not elves.
The orcs.
The orcs. Lord of the Rings. From Lord of the Rings.
They got wet as masses. System
they do. Yeah. They just put helmets on them.
And I assume this was all filmed at Dunkirk. But then again, how would you? It seemed like that. You might cause an environmental catastrophe if you actually filmed this at an actual beach.
Yeah.
Because, and now the extra thing is, I was thinking, how many Spitfires do you think are at the bottom of the English Channel?
Quite a few. Because
not as this, but the Battle of Britain and all the air, and how many ships are sunk. Like, there just must be thousands of them, right?
I assume so, yeah. Hundreds, at least.
That's, another thing that, I can't relate to as, I guess, you can go to, Gettysburg, you can go to Antietam, and you can see these places where tens of thousands of Americans died in American soil, but,
you know,
you're not going to see... You're not going to see crashed military aircraft, or you're not going to be in backyard of Kansas and see some kind of Messerschmitt fighter or something that some dude found. Yeah, it's
or landscape that is just moonlight, right? Still, I forget the French name, Verdun. Holy shit, go there.
Uh-huh.
That looks like it came out of the war yesterday.
Does it really?
As far as I understand, I haven't seen
any present day photos of it. I imagine there's so much unexploded ordnance that it's like a no man's zone.
I think
still.
So. Yeah.
But yeah,
I could be totally wrong about that. But
I'm gonna fact check it because I'm fascinated by all this stuff, and I'm just thinking it's such a shallow. Like, have people actually recovered all those wrecks, and are they in museums somewhere? And,
right.
My favorite World War aircraft is the P-38, and I think there's not very many flying, but the one I've seen that's come to all the air shows in the Midwest was literally something that wrecked up in the Arctic Circle, and it was like Captain America style frozen, and they hauled it out and they fixed it up, and it's one of the only original airframes for the P-38 that's still flying. Yeah, but I was just thinking about all that. So how many shipwrecks and how many planes and how many guys are still down at the bottom of the ocean?
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible movie, and I don't know what I can't tell you any more what to think about it than it got under my skin, so that's good.
Yeah,
that's a good movie. That's it. We'll see you next week for Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, we will see you then.